I'm so glad to have everybody here today listening in. And I want to thank Dick Wheeler for being with us today. And Dick is a member of the congregation, and I thought he would be someone we'd be interested in hearing about and hearing a little bit of his story. So, Dick, let me ask you, I know you are a retired medical doctor.
Yes.
But first, I kind of want to go back and find out, where are you from originally?
A little town 80 miles north of here by the name of Alden.
Alden, Iowa.
Yeah.
Okay.
And by little, I mean we topped out under 80, under 800 people.
800 people.
Yeah.
Now, what did your dad and mother do?
Dad farmed,
mm-hmm.
and mom ran the farmhouse.
Sure. Oh, my. Now, how many siblings did you have?
One.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
My sister had a brother, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And so you really, did your father expect you to work the farm?
Some. Mm-hmm. He was pretty undemanding on that.
Oh, that's nice.
I got by pretty easy on that.
And did you go to church growing up?
Yes.
Oh, where did you go?
Congregational church in Alden.
Oh, okay. A congregational church. They're very similar to us as Presbyterians, so it must not have been too big a difference when you transferred over to a Presbyterian church.
No, I guess their congregational is a little more liberal,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little more singing.
Mm-hmm. And what are some things that you remember about your childhood, especially in church, that left a mark upon your life?
That would have started quite early. Preschool. One of the songs we sang was Brighten the Corner Where You Are. And I was, as I say, a preschooler. And that turns out to be some of the best advice I ever got in my life.
Oh.
I mean, you can't save the world. I finally realized that. But you can brighten the corner where you are.
Mm.
So do that. Brighten the corner where you are. Others may see you brightening your corner and brighten theirs, and so on. It'd be a win-win proposition.
And that's carried you through your whole life, it sounds like.
It has, yeah. I've gradually developed it, including humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important part of my life.
When you graduated from high school, did you know that you were going to become a medical doctor?
No, I did not.
How did that happen?
I was kind of wistfully thinking of it, but I knew we would never have the money. And so then I got drafted in the Army in World War II, and they looked at my record and proceeded to send me to school.
Oh.
And I wound up in med school, and the war was over, and I finished med school at the University of Tennessee Med School in Memphis. And that's how I did it.
So I just doing the math, you were born in 22.
Yes.
So you're coming up to your 99th birthday. That meant you probably graduated from high school, 1940?
39.
39, right? Before Pearl Harbor.
I was 16 when I graduated.
Oh, you were 16.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So you, when were you drafted, or when did you go into the military?
Well, after my third year of college.
Okay.
I went to Ellsworth Junior College in Iowa Falls for a couple of years. And then went to Iowa State for 1 year.
Okay.
And that was the year that Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So in the fall, instead of starting back to school, I just waited to be drafted, and I was.
Yeah.
Actually, in January. And
boy. Well, it had to be very difficult. You know, your family had a small farm, and I'm sure they weren't wealthy. And it says a lot about you that you were able to get through 3 years of college during the Depression and being able to do all that.
Yeah.
Did you work back on your father's, on your parents' farm in the summer, or did you work elsewhere while you were going to college?
at Ellsworth, yeah, back on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
The summer after my junior year at Iowa State, I worked on a beef farm in Michigan.
Oh.
A guy that was set up to handle up to 500,000 pounds of honey a year.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, he had 20-some bee yards, each one with 3 or 4 dozen beehives in it, scattered over 3 counties in Michigan, in what they call the thumb country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a map, Michigan looks like a mitten. And this was the thumb, the Saginaw Peninsula. We were out on the tip of that.
Oh, that's beautiful there.
Yeah, it was. Mm. Originally, that had been a white pine forest.
Mm.
But there weren't many trees.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, there were a lot of apple orchards. And the beekeeper was glad about that. And the orchard owners were glad about it. It was a win-win situation.
My first church was in Cranberry Country, where the beekeepers were worth their weight in gold, because that in the spring, they relied on them to get for the whole season to go well. It all depended on those bees.
Yeah.
What did you do to help the beekeeper? What was your job?
Well, we went out to 2 or 3 of the bee yards every day, 6 days a week. And because particularly in the spring, we had to get to every hive every 4 days.
Wow.
Because otherwise they would develop a new queen,
mm-hmm,
and swarm.
Now, did you have to put on all the garb and have the bees all around you?
No, just the hat. With the bee screen around it that we tied around our neck.
Oh, my goodness.
But other than that, we were exposed to the bees.
Did you get bit very much?
Yeah. I figure about stung about 10 times a day.
Oh, gosh.
For 100 days for a total of 1,000 bee stings.
Oh, no.
So that's a very rough estimate on my part. But anyway, I'm real immune to bee stings.
I bet you are.
And hornet and wasp and so forth, they don't bother me.
And it didn't intimidate you that you knew that's what you were going to have to do to get paid to work for a summer?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
It did. But I did it anyway.
Yeah.
At the end of my first week, my wrists swelled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, nothing.
Wow. Now, when did you meet your wife, Lois? Was that after you were in?
No, that was before.
Oh.
That was during my junior year. She was going to Drake. I was going to Iowa State. And my roommate was a Des Moines boy who came down to see his girlfriend every weekend. And he wondered if Loy would find a friend for a double date. Loy was it.
Oh, gosh.
So we started corresponding after I was on the bee farm. We didn't correspond before that. And then it all worked from there. And then during the military, we corresponded. When I'd be home on furlough, we'd have a date or two. And I must have looked pretty good on paper, because she married me in spite of everything.
Wow. Now, it must have been special to have somebody to think about while you were going through everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh. It helped. You bet.
So you were always in the United States through the war.
Yeah, never got out of continental United States.
My goodness, there must have been a whole lot of jealous guys when they heard your story.
Well, I was a little embarrassed about it, so I was quiet.
Sure, but you shouldn't be, because you were working hard, I'm sure, to get your degree, and you finished your undergraduate degree, and then you went to medical school during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war was over right about the time you graduated?
The war was over before I graduated. I didn't graduate till 49.
Oh, sure. And that was in 45.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had a ways to go in med school when the war was over.
Did they do anything with you during Korea, or were you already?
Yeah, they drafted me.
Well, those stinkers.
Well, there was what was called the doctor's draft. There were doctors and four or five other specialists, pharmacists, that they needed and didn't have. And so the doctor draft was installed, and I was in for only a year.
But were you in Korea?
No, again. I went down to Camp Crowder, Missouri. I was in charge of the hospital there while they were expanding Camp Crowder. It had been, I don't know, something during the war, and then they were done with it. And so they reopened it, and I was there during that time, and during its early days, opened.
Well, that would have been exciting. And was Lois able to be with you?
Yeah.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
That's neat. Now, how many children do you have?
Four.
Four children. And when was the oldest one born?
She was born while I was still in med school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Boy, that had to be something to be working that hard and on med school and everything, and then to try to be raising a child in the midst of it. Lois did a lot, I bet.
It wasn't really fair to Lois because she unloaded me. That worked.
And those were the days when it wasn't easy. It wasn't as easy either. You didn't have disposable diapers, and you didn't have all the things you do today.
That's right.
So it was a lot of work.
Yeah, it was.
And you have four children. Where do they live now?
Well, that one, Cindy, lives here in Des Moines. She's in Clive. She's just 3 miles up Hickman Road and off it a couple of blocks. So that's real handy.
Yeah.
And Michael, whom you met this today, is in Minnesota, and he has just retired. And the twins, Judy and Jan, Judy is in Florida. She and her husband moved there after they retired to be close to their oldest daughter, who is a tenured professor at the University of Florida in Gainesville.
Oh, sure. Oh, and, what a position.
So that made it handy for them. Mm-hmm. And Janet lives in Colorado. Mm. And she and her husband are retired, and they're outside of Bella Vista, which is way up there at 8,000 feet. And they live 1,000 feet above that, actually, out of town, which is too high for me. I can't visit them anymore. So that's kind of a regret, but she visits me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just another American family spread all over the country.
My goodness, yes. Mm. Yeah, when I was a kid, a lot of families, none of them ever got out of the county.
Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Boy, things have changed, and I think in a lot of ways for the better. It isn't all bad, and to see the way the interstate highway system in the 50s made such a difference for the way people moved and traveled. And
oh, my goodness, yes.
When I think about the things you've seen in your almost 99 years, it just must floor you sometimes.
Yeah, it does. Massive change.
Oh, and it must have been really challenging in the medical profession, too. You had to be on the continually studying to react. What kind of medicine did you practice?
Anesthesia. Yeah. And the practice of anesthesia changed completely twice in my lifetime. I went in the open drop ether days, and then it went to the single syringe, and then that evolved to all of the complex equipment that we have today.
So many people of science struggle with the idea of faith. How were you able to keep a strong faith and also make that unified with your background in medicine and science. Did you feel any pull or disjointed feeling between those two, or were they always in sync in your mind?
No, I thought they were together. I know a lot of doctors and scientists poo-poo religion completely, and as far as I'm concerned, that's their problem. If they want to talk about it, I'll talk about it, but I don't stand on it.
Mm-hmm. So your faith can be rational as well as just other spiritual as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that God is there, and I think that Jesus of Nazareth lived and died as described and never told a lie, and that heaven is there. And I have no idea what heaven is like. I'm sure most people have their own idea that differs in some particulars from everybody else. I suppose when we die, we go to a place quite similar to what we've always imagined, and then we get educated and go on to the real heaven beyond that at varying speeds.
Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine, because as a doctor, you do things similar to me. You're around people a lot who are in different stages of illness, and then you have so many people that have died that you know. I can't imagine not having faith and dealing with that much death and pain.
Faith certainly helps. And when I look at the world's problems today, I certainly don't see a way out. I see great immediacy in major problems. But I have faith that God isn't going to turn out to be a loser.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. It's a beautiful way of saying that. How are you living your faith now? Because at 90, almost 99, you're limited in how much you can get out. Mm-hmm. You're not able to get to church the way you would have liked. How do you live your faith in these moments?
Well, at Calvin Community, I'm right in the corner where I am, and I have faith discussions with various people, discuss the major problems of the world. We have a devotion service every Thursday morning, and we have a Bible study every Monday afternoon, early afternoon. I attend those regularly, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a wonderful, and that's one of the blessings of being in a community environment as you get older.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us and to share this. Because I think it's important for people in the congregation to know each other. And in a congregation our size, it's easy to not know one another.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
And so thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.